Hello, I'm Becca, the owner of Meet Cute Romance Bookshop, and this is the Meet Cute Book Pod. Today, we have the audio from our second virtual Mind the Gap panel focusing on the politics of diversity in writing, reading, and publishing romance with Nisha Sharma, Nana Malone, Kennedy Ryan, and Adriana Herrera. This conversation was recorded in July 2023. You'll hear our panelists discuss the way that talking about diversity broadly masks anti-Blackness specifically, what the subtext is when people say that they don't want anything political in a book, the politics of relatability, the ways culture and the culture of publishing is messaging that books by and about people of color can't be fun, taking ownership over your own reading choices, and much, much more. Then they close out with recs for their own backlist and some books they've loved recently. The audio is a little scratchy at points, but it's well worth listening past that, I promise. Before we transition to that conversation, a little about our panelists. Adriana Herrera was born and raised in the Caribbean, but for the last 15 years has let her job and her spouse take her all over the world. She loves writing stories about people who look and sound like her people getting unapologetic happy endings. Her books have received starred reviews from PW and Booklist and have been featured on The Today Show and NPR, in Entertainment Weekly, The New York Times, and The Washington Post. Adriana is an outspoken advocate for diversity in romance and was one of the co-creators of the Queer Romance POC Collective. Nisha Sharma is the critically acclaimed author of YA and adult contemporary romances, including My So-Called Bollywood Life, Retta and Jai's Recipe for Romance, the Sing Family Trilogy, and the If Shakespeare Was an Auntie series. Her books have appeared in The New York Times, The Washington Post, Cosmopolitan, Entertainment Weekly, and more. She lives in Pennsylvania with her Alaskan husband, her cat Lizzie Bennett, and her dog Nancy Drew. You can find her online at nisha-sharma.com or on TikTok and Instagram at Nisha Writes. Kennedy Ryan, a Rita Award winner and top 25 Amazon bestseller, writes for women from all walks of life, empowering them and placing them firmly at the center of each story and in charge of their own destinies. A contributor for Modern Mom magazine, Kennedy's writings have appeared in Chicken Soup for the Soul, USA Today, and many others. The founder and executive director of a foundation serving Atlanta families living with autism, she has appeared on Headline News, Montel Williams, NPR, and other media outlets as an advocate for families living with autism. And last but not least, Nana Malone, a local treasure and Wall Street Journal and USA Today bestselling author who writes sexy, feel-good romance, really straddling the contemporary and romantic suspense genres. And now, through the magic of podcasting, here's the conversation between Adriana, Nisha, Nana, and Kennedy.
Should I kick us off with some stats that are incredibly sobering?
Sure, Nisha.
Let's do that, it. Please. So I was pulling these for an event, and I thought it was a really great way to kind of start off the conversation and fan the flames that already exist that we all have. So 11% of the books that were traditionally published in 2018 were written by BIPOC authors, just 11%. 7.8% of traditionally published romance novels in 2021 were published by BIPOC authors. And that's in romance, 7.8%. And one Black author has been on the New York Times combined print and ebook list and hardcover list from January through June of this year. Just one.
That sounds right. That sounds accurate.
And that had me thinking about how the term diversity has really changed from when we really started talking about it to now, and how anti-Blackness has been separated from the conversation completely.
Yeah, and that was a long, hard road that was traveled by many of us, all of us, in this particular conversation that, like, around 2017, 2018, like, when the RWA Rita Awards were still happening, there were two or three years where it was like very like intense advocacy of like talking about like not just the lack of diversity, but specifically anti anti-Blackness, Black and Brown authors not being part of like nominations and just in general not getting book deals or just like not part of like the conversation in general in romance. So it feels like we were in a place, and then like that whole conversation around diversity has been really like that piece of it has been really diluted in the last few years, it feels to me.
Right. And I think that when you talk about anti-Blackness, it feels to me like kind of like it's peaking, like it's increasing. And I don't see it anywhere more than I think TikTok and some of these viral social spaces. I think that the anti-Blackness is systemic, and then it's also just people. You know, like when I say systemic, I mean, we all know algorithmically there's bias against people of color. But then when you dig into people who are posting and the things that people say and the conversations that are happening. And then when you even look at trends, when you talk about lists, Nisha, like when you look at, if you look at the USA Today list, if you look at even the New York Times list right now, if you look at the top 100 Amazon, the only romance novels that feature Black heroines that are on those lists are written by non-Black women. That is indicative of anti-Blackness, because you don't see Black women who are writing Black characters being rewarded in the same way. So I mean, I'm just talking about one little like indicator of the anti-Blackness that I see, is that we are not even, and this is not for everybody, because we have some influencers and we have some people who are going so hard for us. Yes. Like, I'm so grateful for them. I'm so grateful for the ones who like push back against that. But when you mention anti-Blackness, Nisha, like sometimes the calls come in from inside the house, and you're just like these conversations that are happening. I think people not interrogating. And I saw something today where people were like, well, we should be able to read whatever we want to read. Like, I'm Black, but I don't read Black, and I don't post Black, and I don't promote Black, and I should be able to do that. You absolutely should. But we also can create an environment where you should at least interrogate why that is, what's being perpetuated when you do that. So I see people and I see systems, those kind of those things promoting what you're talking about, Nisha, in addition to what's going on in the industry itself.
Yeah. I mean, and the difficulty is that the system of white supremacy that keeps us in fighting with each other, like, I mean, it's horrifying. I mean, you see the things on TikTok, you know, like Black readers and bloggers and just being like, well, I don't read Black books. Or if I do, I only read Black books. If I see a white person in this book, and then you're like, guys, the problem is not, we can read whatever we want. We can enjoy whatever we want. We do want to support people that, you know, I'm like Issa Rae, I'm like, I'm supporting every Black and Brown. Like, if I see somebody, I'm buying the book, even if I can't get to it. But the fact that we are still having these divisive conversations, like, well, if it's not Black romance, I'm not reading it. And I'm like, this was written by a Black woman. If like, if the woman in the book is Black, great, awesome, fantastic, like a Black woman getting loved on. But if her partner is not, even if he's Latin or he's Indian or he's white or whatever, they're like, you're a detriment to the cause. And it's like, guys, we're not meant to be fighting each other. We're not, the fight isn't here.
No.
Take it out there. And those conversations are divisive. And like, they're like, well, I'm only reading this, I'm only reading that. Or then the ones who are like, I only read books by white people. And I'm like, those ones I can't help. I can't do anything about that, because they would rather read a book. You see it in the indie spaces too, by a woman, like someone who's non-Black. And I'm like, okay, well, I can't. And they will get on with their whole chest on TikTok and be like, well, this is how Black women's meant to be written. I was like, do you know that we've been doing this for decades, years? Like, do you know how many women have already been here doing this, writing amazing books? Not that these other books aren't great, but I'm like, we've already been here and they're refusing to pick us up. It can get exhausting.
Yeah.
100%. And, you know, one of the, I have to, first, I want to kind of acknowledge the fact that like my proximity to like to whiteness is very different than all of your proximity to whiteness, because South Asians benefit from specific privileges that don't exist in different spaces. So like as speaking from specifically from like a South Asian perspective, like I had this experience at Book Bonanza, and I think I shared it with all of you, where I was on a panel, and I will say that the author who mentioned this on the, or the person who mentioned this, who was like in the room, has approached me and apologized, but they said that, oh, I don't like to read or write anything political in my books, none of the political stuff in my books. And the way that I'm looking at the conversation that we're having now, and the this like phrase of nothing political in our, in my books, is that like they've separated the diversity that makes them feel comfortable and the diversity that makes them feel uncomfortable. And the diversity that makes them feel uncomfortable is like the BIPOC story, specifically Black and brown stories, but like Black queer stories specifically, who are, you know, have been the most oppressed in publishing. And like the stories that are like closer to whiteness, like stories that are written by like white women specifically, who maybe like have one level of diversity versus intersectional diversity. Right. So, you know, that is something that I've kind of seen, where like they're labeling like Black and brown stories as political now, which is now separate from diversity altogether.
Right. And I mean, the mere like statement, I don't read things that are political, is political in and of itself, because what you are actually saying is I am opting out from thinking about other experiences or any other thing or any other kind of existence that challenges my own comfort. Mm-hmm. And so I am, you know, I am unable to enjoy a book that reflects back to me an experience that may make me feel uncomfortable about the privilege that I enjoy. Mm-hmm. And so that's political. It's like saying, well, I don't vote. Like, I don't bother. I don't vote. Like, I don't vote is political. And so to me, like, and I've thought a lot about this. Like, there was a time, like a few years ago, where the conversation around like people not being able to like tolerate reading about experiences outside of their own, or like experiences that didn't center them. And it was like, I can't relate to that. Right. And so like, there was a lot of conversation about, well, you can relate to a vampire. So, you know, so like that kind of became unacceptable, right? Like there was a lot of challenging of like that language of like, I don't find that relatable to me. And I feel like now it's been replaced with, well, I just want escapism. Mm-hmm. And what that means is, I want escapism means I don't want to read anything where I'm not able to center myself. Mm-hmm. And so we, all of us here, in order to enjoy romance growing up, we had to learn how to be able to enjoy reading stories that didn't center us. And we found ways to connect with those stories. But there is, I think for a lot of readers out there, even people of color, there's a lack of proficiency mm-hmm. around reading stories that are outside of centering whiteness or like the white gaze, right? So like there's just like not the muscle isn't there to take like our stories and read them. And like, again, like we're not just writing about trauma, we're writing about like bright big futures and happy endings. Mm-hmm. Through the lens of a person of color. And even that is like the muscle isn't there to like navigate that mm-hmm. reading experience.
I mean, and the thing is, the conversation, I mean, and I was talking to Kennedy earlier about this, you know, I have a book on submission and I was like, oh my God, it's so many vegetables. And I was like, I was freaking out because I was like, oh, it feels like vegetables to me, because especially on the indie side, like I at least really center on like fun. I'm like, there's brown nipples. You're going to be fine. She's still having a great time and she's shooting at people. It's awesome. But like when you're like, even like, and I was rereading it and I was like, actually, you know, this isn't really a lot of vegetables, but like, I recognize that from a white centered gaze, it's going to be like, wait, you mean she's the one and she's got a white best friend who's like, what do you think, girl? How do you think you're going to handle this problem? Oh, shucks. And then she gets written off page, you know? And I was like, ooh. But like what I always, you know, especially, you know, as I started the brown nipple challenge, I was like, look, this is a vitamin enriched cake. There are brown nipples, but these women are like pirates and adventurers. And, you know, sometimes they're married to or having affairs with presidents or whatever the case is. They're having fun and great, and they're going to get a happy ending. And in case of Kennedy's books, you might cry along the way, but like, they're going to be like enjoyable and satisfying at the end. I was like, this is cake. We injected vitamins. But trad, a lot of trad books that sometimes you pick up, you're like, this feels like vegetables sometimes. And that's the narrative. And I think trad has done that deliberately. Do you look, here we go with all our important books with mm-hmm. vegetables in them. I know we've given you fun, fluffy covers, but inside you will learn something, a lesson of importance about brown people. And like, they've highlighted those books in a very specific way. You look at them and you're like, this feels like a brown person vegetables book. And people are like, I'm going to go over here to this book with the skull and the flowers on it, and it's going to be really fun.
Yeah.
And I get real escapism because they're like, I know what you're trying to code over here. And which is concerning. Like when you look at the trad landscape, trad is like, we're trying to do this thing about diversity, and we're going to place you over here where we're going to code that this is going to be hard stuff. And yes, there are readers for that. Like there are readers, I call them the OG readers who are like, I will read anything and it's going to be fun and awesome. And they want to be challenged a little. But unfortunately, there's a new crop of readers who somehow did not come out of YA who are like, I don't want anything hard. I don't want it. I don't want to think. I don't want to, unless it's about a mafia guy.
And the thing about it though, it's like, I don't want anything hard that is like pertaining to like systems of oppression. Cause yes. At the same time, like dark romance is huge where there is like a lot of violence and like a lot of like pretty traumatic stuff happening on page, but none of it has to do with dismantling white supremacy or like challenging it or pointing a finger to it. Cause like, I think that's the other piece of it where I'm like, they can tolerate graphic violence.
Well, and I think there's this double standard. There's this hypocrisy where it's like, oh my gosh, these black books, they're so hard. They have drug dealers. When you're fine reading about an Italian or a Russian who's in the mafia, who's a drug dealer, who's an arms dealer. Oh my gosh, baby mama drama, unless it's a single dad romance in a small town. Like there's a hypocrisy to conversation surrounding our work. I did a post about Hookshot, which is single dad, divorced. And a black reader was like, here we go again, perpetuating the single parent household in black. I'm like, lady, it's a divorce. Like it's a divorce. Like there is like this swarm to stereotype and assumptions pressed on us, and we can write one thing and it is trauma, and a white writer can write it and it's relatable. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like there's so much hypocrisy around the discourse when you're talking about our books. And I think that it's a very insidious narrative that we as black and brown people have to be careful about. This is going to sound bad. I don't have expectations of white women. I don't have expectations that white women will have these conversations. I think there are exceptions to the rule. I can think of some of them and they're amazing. I am not looking to white women to interrogate a system of which they are the primary beneficiary. Why would they? What is their motivation for that? Do you know what I mean? So I'm talking about like us, because though the conversation, I can't,
we will do what we can. And we hope that readers outside of BIPOC readership are having great conversations. But I'm just like, we can't even within our own community have conversations about our work without the hypocrisy. I mean, it exists obviously with white readers too. But when I hear even Black and Brown readers like, oh, the drug dealers, but they're like, oh, mafia, dark romance, single dad. You know, and I'm like, baby.
Every time a mafia book is like, oh my God, it's the best thing I've ever written. Okay. So he's like a drug trafficker and an arms dealer. And I'm like, are you not hearing? Please stop.
And I mean, the thing is like, if I write it, it's going to be a Dominican. Who wants to be reading? Are they going to read about?
Right, because I'm not inherently critiquing, and I want to be very clear, I'm not inherently critiquing dark romance. I'm not critiquing mafia romance. I love a good mafia romance, but I'm just saying we have to be careful when the same things that we, the elements that we love about mafia romance and the elements that we love about single dads and about all of these other things, when we are talking about Black and Brown people, those same situations exist. Yeah. And we talk about them as it's hood, it's urban, it's ghetto, it's, you know what I mean? And that just, I think sometimes we discount the fact that sometimes we readers trust white women with our stories sometimes in a way that they don't trust us.
Yeah.
You know, and there is a...
That's because of what like Nana said earlier, and it's the system has developed this like false belief that readers have ingested, saying that if you read a book about by and about Black and Brown people, you are going to have to learn something and you are going to have to be absolutely uncomfortable. And it is going to be an experience that is beyond like enjoying a romance, like that you would normally enjoy like elsewhere. Right. So like, there's this whole workshop that happens in corporate, actually, this DE&I workshop. And it's like, it's been singing in the back of my head since like with all of us talking. And basically what they do is they get a room full of like cishet white male executives in a room, and they give them all resumes, and the like some resumes will be by like people who have very obvious like names from different countries and very like obvious like they identify with different genders and sexuality, and like everyone is supposed to grade the resume. And hands down, the resumes by like white, but with names that are like have historically been identified as like white names will always be ranked higher, but the names by like with Black and Brown names are always so low. And it's the same resume. It's the same resume they give to the entire group. And that's what we're trying to like tell readers, like, you are going to get a romance, like regardless, you are going to get a romance. It's just a different type of romance. Like, and you are just trying to label it based on what this larger system of oppression has told you that you have to label it. And it's like, they are trying to other us, and we don't want the people in-house to like contribute to that othering. So But like, that's all we're trying to tell people. Like, yeah, like our experiences are different and they're new and they're exciting and they're wonderful and they're layered and nuanced. And if you do learn something, amazing. But like, that doesn't mean like, you know, and yeah, maybe it will make you uncomfortable. There are some mafia romances, to be honest, that I've never experienced some of those things. And I'm like, this is making me uncomfortable too. But like at the same time, it's, you know, it's, we're not asking them to like people to be like, you know, you are going to get a like 400 level class lesson every time you sit and read this. And like, that is what I think people are afraid of, like inherently afraid of, when they don't realize that's not what's happening here.
And the thing about it is like, it's not like it's something that's new. Like this, like, I mean, Kennedy wrote a whole book about like Hollywood and like how, like truly, like it's always been like it's almost like it's part of like American entertainment to code anything that isn't celebrating like this like the myth of America, which is like white and like, you know, cis hat white, is like something that is somehow too much to be entertainment. Like it's not quite like it can't really be fun if it involves like the lives of immigrants, or if involves the lives of Black people, or if involves like those histories that just like are not part of what like is considered like escapism.
Yeah.
And I think it is like a problem of consciousness. Like I think about this all the time. Like there is, I think there's a new readership that's come to romance from like during the pandemic that I think there is like, there needs to be like, I think consciousness raising around the fact, like, have you noticed that you've read 150 romances this year and all of them are written by white authors?
Girl, you know full well they're going to come and tell you they don't look at the race of the author, please. I just, you know that that is going to be the argument, the first argument they make. Listen, I just, because I mean, I ran into this a lot when I was like doing the Brown, like, I mean, when I started the Brown Nipple Challenge, I'm still doing it. Everyone should join. But like, you, the argument is still there because they're like, I just read the books Amazon recommends. And I was like, you know, that algorithm is racist, right? Yes. You know, that it's only That's pushing you books. Because the first time you go and you pick up a Colleen Hoover book, it says, well, let me get all the books that exactly match all the categories and all the things and all the keywords of this Colleen Hoover book, which is fine, right? That's it. That's the job of the algorithm, right? But like, unless you deliberately go, I want something different, and you type in a different kind of author, if like Adriana Herrera, like, then you're going to start all of a sudden seeing a different recommendation, more Latinx authors, more like Afro-Latinx authors, more queer authors. And then you're going to be like, oh, this is different. Yes, it's different because you had to physically go and search. Amazon and TikTok and all these algorithms are only going to serve you what you know. So when you tell me you don't look at the author because A, you assume white, B, it's kind of like sheep. You're just consuming what you're fed, and you're taking no ownership over your own, what you consume. And then C, you're deliberately not looking.
Conscious consumerism. Yeah.
You're really not looking. Like, they're like, well, because there's a crop of reader who's like, it's not my fault. I bear no responsibility. Like, and I'm like, oh, were you the same ones when like you have, you know, like really great authors, like, I mean, great books but they're non-white. Like, and then like, or the readers who are like, oh, I just assume that she's white. I just ignore the coding that the character's Black. And I'm just like, I can't help you. I don't know what to do with you. When it's also readers who look like us who are doing the same thing, and they're like, oh no, I don't. Like, I remember, I will never forget, it was at Book Bonanza last year. There was an author who was like, you know, honestly, I'm hard to miss. I'm in a tiara and wearing African print and usually standing up and dancing. I mean, it's very difficult to miss me. So if you make eye contact, I'm gonna sell you a book. And I kind of called her over, and I had some covers with me on them. And she was like, is that you? And I was like, yeah. And so she was like, and so I told her the story of how I ended up on my own covers. And she was like, oh. And then she's like, well, what are the books about? Cause you know, she was like preparing herself. And I was like, well, okay, they're both undercover spies, right? And she was like, wait, what? It's like the idea that there could be something fun and entertaining inside of something written by Black and Brown people. She was like, wait. I was like, yeah, it's just, it's Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but with brown nipples. And she was so flabbergasted by that. The idea never even entered her brain or her sphere. And I was like, what are we reading? You know, I asked her, I was like, just what do you consume? And she's like, oh, well, I started with this, you know, the pandemic, bobbity bop. And then she'd been led on this merry chase of like non-melanated authors. And she's like, well, I just didn't never pay attention. And I was like, well, you can try it since you're here. I'm going to sell this to you. And then she came back and was like, that was so fun. And she seemed genuinely surprised. And I was like, why are you surprised? And I know why she's surprised, but I wanted her to do some critical thinking, because at the end of the day, there's so many readers who are paying zero attention.
I think it literally is it's not in the consciousness that there is, that they are like, they are only consuming one thing.
And this is like not for everyone, right? Like there are some people who are out there really trying and making lists and being very
supportive.
Yeah. So like 100% have to like call them out, and they really are like leading the charge in a lot of spaces. But like specifically on TikTok, what I found is that some of those influencers who are really pushing are the ones their videos get suppressed.
Yes, like it comes at a cost to them.
It comes at a cost to them. And it's really like disheartening to see it. Like my book that comes out on Tuesday, like I've been tagged in a lot of like creators' videos who talk about it. I'm very grateful for them. But I can see that like the videos where they talk about my book and they show the cover with like two brown people on the cover, like those video views are so low compared to all of the other views on their page. Right. And I'm like, this is a cost to them. And that's because of the algorithm, which means that if we want to be more, more like conscious about the content that we're consuming, we want to engage more with BIPOC books and with readers and with authors, like we have no choice but to do our own due diligence and to like you guys said, to search for it, because the algorithm is just, it's not there. It's not supporting any of us.
And when you talk about the algorithm, you know, there's a default, right, with the algorithm, and specifically TikTok and other viral spaces that are really exploding some like careers, exploding careers. Yeah. And I think that there are a lot, on one hand, a lot of Black authors and Brown authors are doing better than they've ever done because of TikTok. And I want to acknowledge that. Like, I definitely want to acknowledge that. But I don't see stratospheric. Do you know what I mean? Like the algorithm, that algorithm is doing stratospheric things for not for for a lot of non-Black and non-Brown. And I don't see stratospheric. And what I mean by that is, yes, we might be doing better than we've ever done, but it is the careers, the way the algorithm is favoring, it is widening the gap. Yes. Do you know what I mean? And so often they're like, but you're doing better than you've ever done. Don't expect me to be happy with scraps.
Yeah.
Right. Don't expect me to be happy with crumbs. With crumbs.
That bullshit.
And so there are two things that we can hold two things at the same time. We can say, wow, TikTok and these viral social media spaces are so good for romance. Like they have exploded romance. They've broadened the tent. They've brought in a lot of people who weren't reading romance in the past. But we can also say this same algorithm that's doing that for romance is also in many ways peripheralizing Black and Brown people. I mean, lists are not everything, but when you look at the list, Nisha, you talked about there being one Black author on the New York Times list. I don't remember which combination, hard. If you
Both
go
with them.
Both if you them. Go into romance, if you look specifically at romance, and I'm not talking about YA or children's, we have to go all the way back to Tia Williams over 2 years ago with 7 Days in June to find a Black author who made a Black romance author who made the New York Times list. And that was with a Reese pick. Do you know what I mean?
Could she list now? Could she list now?
And that is what I mean. Systemically, what I mean is that the algorithm, when it grows these careers and it swells these numbers astronomically, let's say it used to take, I don't know, 10, let's just be arbitrary and say it used to take 10,000 sales to make the New York Times list. Let's just say that. We have no idea what that formula is. But let's say let's say it used to take 10,000 sales in a week to make the New York Times list. That's an arbitrary number. TikTok is favoring white authors to the point where an author can sell 30,000 copies in a week. And that is so out of reach for the vast majority of Black and Brown authors. So even if we're doing better, there are things that are completely out of our reach because of how this algorithm is pushing other groups. And so it's like, there are things that there are achievements that we used to be able to grab hold of that because the space is widening and the advancement is so far beyond what we can do based on what the algorithm is doing for us versus what it's doing for others, those things aren't in our reach anymore. And it is in some ways peripheralizing. And if somebody is like, oh, no, no, remember that one person? Oh, no, no, remember that one Black girl? Remember that one brown girl? No, ma'am, you are trying to win an argument. I'm not looking for exceptions to the rule, because if you're giving me exceptions to the rule, you're trying to win an argument. I'm trying to fix a problem.
Right. It's about equity, right? It's like the issue is sure, anybody can go viral on TikTok in theory, but the reality is that they haven't, and they don't. It's specifically we've all had this conversation. I've always said this since the beginning. I'm convinced Black and brown authors just cannot go viral on TikTok, because I feel like if they could, they already would have. And I think it's because the fact that we are writing books about Black and brown people already put us at a disadvantage. And it's the same thing. It's not like we couldn't write the kind of book that could possibly get us there. But it's like we all find it important to write these characters that are speaking to an experience that we feel deserves to have a happy ending, right? Because at the end of the day, I think that is what's the most heartbreaking thing for me, is the value that it's giving to our happy endings.
Right.
Yeah. Happy endings that honor and are authentic to our experience without compromising the reality of those experiences. Mm-hmm. And that is that's what's hard, because we could compromise and do it differently.
Yeah.
To appease whatever fragilities are finding our stories too much to handle. But we are trying to honor that those happy endings have value. Mm-hmm. And that's where things are hard, because
that's where it's a direct attack on us personally, where basically what people are saying is that people like you do not deserve the same respect and have the same value as people who are written by white authors, who are caricatures of someone like you. And so that is the hardest part as an author. That is the most heartbreaking part for me, where basically what you're saying is that me as an individual who is writing stories with other people like me do not deserve the same respect, the same honor, the same appreciation. And so, and it's an everyday, reality for so many people who, are currently living in states that, that is something that they battle with on a regular basis in their day-to-day life. But, in romance, we're a place where we're really fighting for joy. Mm-hmm. It's people are building barriers for joy. And that is difficult. That's a difficult pill to swallow.
I mean, and the thing is, it's for those of us who've been around a long time, growing up as kids, you were never going to see yourself, and particularly having specific identities that were immigrant experiences, you were never, ever, ever going to see your stories. And so and as Adriana was saying earlier, it's we just learn to adjust our brain. We're we'll just pretend, we'll just close our eyes and pretend that, this could be a so-and-so, and sure, she's in the Scottish Highlands. I'm not sure how she got there, but okay.
But she's got an afro with her kilt or whatever.
Right? Because we learn to build those calluses. We're just we'll figure it out. Right. And then all of us, as we grew up, were you know what? We were told a certain story when we were young and we were reading those books that we didn't deserve love. That was the outline, point blank, if I never see it here, that means that clearly there are no stories about me, which means that I don't deserve this. And that's the narrative that been, especially in this country, dug in and wrapped us in. And then as we started writing, people would say with their whole chest, nobody wants those stories. They would say that out loud. I've had that said to me before, and I was just what? We all decided to write those kind of stories. I know there are Ghanaian girls somewhere who over here who are yes, 100% a spy fell in love with me. Mm-hmm. Yes, totally. And they want to have that experience. Because I was why is it always that when it's there's anybody brown in it, there has to be some kind of struggle. It has to be hard. Why can't the race car driver just decide that he loves her? Why not? Yeah. Because that's not the narrative. Because we're not the ones that the race car driver falls in love with, is what we've been told. And that's what a certain group of people have been told, well, like, not them. So, like, it's funny, I've been watching with Theodore Taylor, we're co-watching, like, I watch every Black Bachelorette. I just, like, I'm like, must support in some way. And every time I'm really upset. And I'm just like, it's the same story. It's like, the girl, like, no one's actually in love with her. I'm like, oh, this is so scripted and horrible. Every reality show, everything, like, reinforces. And I was like, are we ever going to see a South Asian girl, a Latin girl, like not a white Latin girl, like one who is actually brown? And I'm like, no, we're just going to see Black girls just done dirty every time.
Yeah.
Because that's the narrative that gets, like, just reinstilled and reintroduced. And, like, yeah, everyone who's, like, writing and reading romance, it's like, well, all these love stories, there should be room for everybody. And all these short stories should be accessible. If you tell me you love mafia and I've delivered you everything and you want in a mafia book, and I just said that there are brown nipples, and you're like, I don't know, I just didn't put into that to it. I couldn't, I don't know. And then when we're writing that mafia book, P.S., I don't think a lot of readers understand, like, the hoops we have to jump, because we're like, can't do that to a Black woman. No, uh-uh.
Yeah.
That happened? Ooh, really, we can't do that. Like, the hoops I have to jump through to write a, like, quote unquote dark romance, I'm like, oh, if he kidnapped, like, her, I just...
The reality is, like, there's still only, like, less than 10% of, you know, like, BIPOC authors, and the, like, all of these, like, different considerations are sitting on your shoulders to represent a wider range of people than just your specific identity.
Yes.
And so, yeah, like, even when I'm thinking about South Asians, like, in my stories, I have to think about, like, okay, if I do this particular thing, like, I have to consider things like casteism, colorism, you know, Hindu nationalism. Like, these are the things that, like, really continue to, like, live in my brain. If anyone has any last thoughts before we move to questions.
Let's do the questions.
Lisa's is an interesting one. Lisa asked, do any of you feel trad publishing has reached diversity fatigue as a selling point?
See, I feel like trad publishing has done this neat trick where they've made diversity something that still just favors people that are not writing Black and brown people. And so what's happened is that the conversation around diversity now has the... Like, it's now, like, you know, like, important representation, like neurodivergent and chronic illness and all those things, which are very important.
Yes.
And they're also, like, you know, like, it's not like an oppressed class.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Or like
In some ways, it reminds me about how when you really dig into the numbers, when we're talking about broadening what diversity is, and with the caveat of everything that you've just said, Adriana, and respecting all of those experiences, I'm inside of the, you know, some of those other diverse experiences. But when we're talking about something that is diluting, something that is, it's diluting the discussion of BIPOC and, I'll say specifically, anti-Blackness. When you talk about what's diluting that, it's the same way when you dig in by broadening that diversity conversation, which I'm not saying that we shouldn't do. I feel like I have to say over and over because somebody's going to say, Kennedy Ryan's against neurodiversity, Kennedy Ryan's against chronic illness, Kennedy, that's not what I'm talking about. But that's not the same conversation when you're talking about white supremacy. That's a different conversation. Right. And so you get to check off your little diversity boxes, but at the same time, you're not dealing with how white supremacy has publishing in a chokehold, right? And so
in the age of banned books.
Oh, what I was going to say is when you dig into the numbers, when you're talking about broadening that diversity conversation, when you dig into the numbers of something like affirmative action, no group benefited more from affirmative action than white women.
Yeah. Nope.
Right. Absolutely. And so it, to me, there is an analogy when you talk about when you start broadening and you start bringing in elements that were not originally intended, that were not the spirit behind that thing, which when we're talking about diversity, we're talking about Black, we're talking about brown. When you start broadening that conversation, which is a valid conversation, but when you're talking about white supremacy specifically, we dilute that conversation by rolling everything else into it. Because when you do that, all of a sudden, we're not just talking about white supremacy, and we're not just talking about how Black and brown and BIPOC authors are making up such a piddly percentage of publishing. We're talking about broader issues, not issues that should not be respected, not issues that should not be discussed, but at the same time, we're not dealing with white supremacy. And one thing I know about white supremacy is it's always going to look for a way to not deal with white supremacy.
Yep.
Yeah.
As we like, as in Florida, trying to tell people some people benefited from slavery. Like,
right.
We're in the age of
yes,
affirmative action being repealed. We're right. We're trying to claim post-racial
yes.
United States, and like the conversation and romance around diversity now is this quagmire of like, what is even diversity now?
Right.
We're like. Some publishers can claim they have 60% diversity in yes. their list, and yet they have less than 10% of their authors are people of color.
Yes.
And this goes back to like the conversation about like diversity in politics, right? Like we have to remember that these publishing houses, a lot of them are owned by hedge funds. They're owned by people who have like lined pockets, and they're all like cishet white men. And they are going to think about like what is going to impact their bottom line. So in order to check off the diversity box, they're going to be like, this is the proximity to whiteness that I'm comfortable with. And it still confirms like the diversity conversation that we have to have. Otherwise, it's going to be bad PR for us. And there have been like some people have come out and said, we don't want bad PR. So we're still talking about diversity in this particular way. But at the same time, it keeps them like safe and making money because they're not addressing anti-Blackness. They're still able to sell in certain school districts. They're still able to like go to different states, and they're not. None of the publishing houses have really taken a stand against in like these specific spaces for Black and brown authors to like fight for them in really meaningful ways. Like none of them. They're all quiet.
I mean, TikTok's making so much money.
Yeah. I mean,
it's to put your money where your mouth is, because if there is a real, and I'm not saying this is a blanket statement, but if there is real concern about our visibility, and it's a vicious cycle that we don't put their books out. We don't, when you walk into these bookstores and you see tables full of romance novels and so few of them are by Black and brown authors, well, this is what people are buying. Well, you're not giving us the same visibility. So we're not, I mean, how could we sell as many books when we don't have the same visibility? Well, if you sold more books, we give you more visibility. Like it's a
complete that conversation is such like title. I'm like, listen, that is that is,
and
such
like
a
they're, and they're taking advantage of Black and brown authors too. Yes. like they're like, oh, you know, we know that like you want this, so like we're gonna do this, and if we don't give it to you, it's not that big of a deal, because you know we can still check off diversity in other ways.
Yes.
So it's awful. Should we answer another question?
Yeah,
one more. I think we have one more. Yeah. Kennedy, since Longshot shook up romance and how romance and more complicated storylines can blend well together, do you think readers are more accepting of that more in 2023 than in 2018?
I don't know if it shook up romance. it shook me up. I definitely see, I think that we have broadened our ideas of what romance is capable of, you know, and I think that not just me. I mean, I when people ask, who do you like, people who like what I do, because I do a very specific thing, you know, and I've talked about it. I write missionally, you know, every time I write a book, there's something, I have intentions. There's something I want to accomplish. Like I think even if you're writing completely happy, completely escapist books, when you are a Black or Brown woman writing romance, it is an act of resistance, because writing our joy flies in the face of the idea that we don't deserve it.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't, it doesn't matter if you're writing something that's completely willy-nilly. If you are a Black or Brown woman writing romance, you are doing an act of resistance, right? And I think that when you talk about something like Long Shot, which there are other books that have done that too, I just think that we as women and we as romance writers, and a lot of us Black and Brown women doing the work of tackling difficult situations, and also in the midst of tackling difficult situations, understanding that anytime we tackle a difficult situation, we will be labeled with trauma porn. Mm. You know what I mean? So I think that a lot of us are digging into content and expanding people's ideas of what romance is capable of. That's not just me. That's not just Black and Brown women. I think it's also, I mean, we as women, as womanists, as feminist, you know, and when people ask me, if I like your books, who else should I read? Like, the first person I tell them is Adriana. And it's not because we write the same thing exactly. It's because we write from the same place. We write from a place of mission. And it's not like every book's going to feel like it's work or like it's heavy, but we understand our place in this genre. I have a sense of responsibility, you know, that I'm doing something. I think all of us do. You know, we're standing in a space that we didn't even get to occupy a decade ago. You know, we are getting to talk about things that we didn't even get to talk about a decade ago. So I definitely think that when I look, and we're talking about expanding diversity, but this question specifically, talking about other serious topics, I'm seeing books now with limb difference. I'm seeing, you know, it's like now we have heroines who are amputees. Now we have, you know, we've expanded what romance is capable of. And I think it's amazing. And mm-hmm. I think that it also, those people who try to denigrate us, when they step into our genre, we surprise them. You know, we surprise them with the quality of what we're doing. So yeah. I don't know if I answered the question well, but.
I mean, I think you answered it well. Like, you always answer everything well. You're amazing. I will say, like, something that you mentioned about, like, referencing Adriana, what I found really telling is if, like, readers are so gung-ho about supporting, like, white authors who write BIPOC characters as, like, their version of, like, or, like, a specific, you know, like, community, I would like for them to go to that author's page and to see what other, like, Black and Brown authors they recommend. Because if they don't recommend anyone, like, are you really supporting someone?
And I just want to say this. I don't get to dictate what anybody writes. I have written white characters. I have written Indigenous characters. I've written outside of my lived experience. But I think what we, like, a lot of times when I see other people writing Black women and having amazing success that we don't, at a level that we don't have access to, if you, first of all, somehow you thought that was your story to tell, and maybe it is, like, we all have to interrogate if a lived experience that's beyond ours is ours to tell, right? I have to do that. I think we should all be doing that. But mm-hmm. there is a step that I feel like so many, and it I'm just going to say, it grates when I see specifically white women writing Black women who then have this exponential success that we don't have access to. And it's hard to have this conversation without somebody saying, you're jealous, you're bitter. No, boo. I'm good over here. But what I'm talking about is when a white woman specifically is writing a Black woman, and when you check on it, they miss the vital step of somehow supporting, pouring back into, amplifying Black and the community that they pulled from. And what that is, when you extract from a community and you exploit and you financially benefit and you pilfer that community for your own gain, and you don't pour back into it, and you are not amplifying that community, that is a colonizer's
mentality. Colonizer.
That is a colonizer's mentality.
Yeah. I mean, look, the lack of amplification is, like, the number one thing. Because, like, I always say, look,
right,
I would rather that a young Black girl see herself on pages somewhere.
Right.
I would rather just at least, because it was so like the land was so barren, right. Unless it was like Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry, right? So the land was so barren. So I'm like, as long as it's like a positive representation, I'll take it. But my number, like, because the number of people that approach me, they're like, well, can I do this? And I was like, you can do whatever you like. You know, I can't guarantee you no one's going to come tell you anything. If you want to do it correctly, you want to do it with respect and with space. Right. The first thing you do before you fix yourself and run and be like, I'm writing a Black character, is you first amplify, which means that you are reading and you're supporting other authors of color before you tiptoe and you trounce into their land. Exactly. Otherwise, what I call you is a profiteer. Mm-hmm. And a colonizer, but I guess that's you know, a sensitive word.
Start with the people who have not had the opportunity to tell their own stories.
Yes. Right. You know, and even if there are people who've had opportunities to tell their own stories, like, still amplify them. It doesn't cost you anything. Right. Because I always say to my child, I'm like, grace costs you nothing. Mm-hmm. So to be gracious enough to go, hey, I'm thinking of writing this story, but before I think that I'm the only and best one to ever tell this particular story, let me go and find other people in this community who have perhaps already been doing this work.
Yeah.
And talk about them and amplify them and support them, not just with my mouth, but financially give them access to my audience, all these things. Do that first.
Right.
Then, as Kennedy just said, look inside yourself to see if you are the one to tell the story.
When you don't do that, when you write our stories, and again, I'm not saying don't write people who don't look like you. That is not the point of my dialogue. But what I am saying is when you write the stories of BIPOC people, you should recognize that there is an otherness that we have that we can't shake. Mm-hmm. And so there is an access that not just white readers, a lot of readers access our skin through you in a way that they're not accessing stories about people who look like us through us. And you are discounting privilege. Like that is your privilege. And to not at least acknowledge that when I write your story, when I write stories about you, people who look like you, and I have a better chance of succeeding, to not at least acknowledge that level of privilege is disrespectful.
And I mean, I think, like, again, you and I talked about this the other day. It's like, we all know we can't go alone.
Right.
We know we can't go alone because for Black and Brown people, the collective is survival. Like, right. we can't go alone. And so I think that is part of, like, if you are going to write us, then you need to know that for us, mm-hmm. you have to, like, at least, like, be enough respectful enough to, like, come to, like, the people that are already here and, like, doing the work, like, yeah. Because we could never. No. It wouldn't even occur to us. It would never even occur to us to just assume we can be the one, mm-hmm. without, like, knowing that, like, we'll be like the one little Black bean in the sea of white rice.
Listen, being that Black bean, like, we've all been there. That little, like, it's like you look around and you're like, oh, and like, and the thing is, we all had that recognition very young. And so from a very young age, when, like, you know, and for our own children, we try and, like, nurture and, like, cover them as, like, quickly, like, we're, like, trying to give them an extra boost and an extra, like, I'm going to love you hard enough so that you don't notice this blanket of, like, salt that you're floating in. But it is, like, so alienating. And romance is about, like, bringing communities together and, like, finding love and finding your community and finding your people, right? But to have that be your basis, like, I mean, and I'm from Ghana. So, like, I come from that basis where I look around and I'm like, this feels great, you know? And then landing in this country, mm-hmm. and being like, and from the time I was 5 years old, being like, I am completely alone, mm-hmm. completely alone. And to like carry that. And then, like, when you write, having the mountain of weight of, like, all these things of, like, I can't say that, certainly mm-hmm. can't do that. Like, we don't ever get to just write romance. Like, I'm writing spy romance, but do you understand all the things that would happen to spies that I can't put in my book happening to a Black woman? Like, I cannot, I literally cannot. One, it turns my stomach. Two, I'm like, they're going to cancel my ass in a minute. So I'm just like, So then she shot him, I guess. Like, I mean,
I'm writing historical romance, and like, I have, like, my author's notes are 70 pages long because I have to justify every single thing that I have in those books and say, this is actually historically, like, I have a source for why I said that brown woman was in that place. And I have another source saying that that brown woman could have gone here in that time, just because there literally is no text that I can reference to in romance in the entire genre that has Black Latin women doing the things that I'm having them do in these books. Like,
it's
it's
groundbreaking, Adriana.
Like, but that's the mission, right? Like, what are we here for if not for that?
Right.
All right. I just wanted to pop back in and ask before we finish, could you each pitch one of your own books that you think people should start with if they haven't read you before, and talk about a book you really enjoyed recently?
I can start. My latest is An Island Princess Starts a Scandal, which is lesbians in Paris having a great time in 1889. And this is the book. And then a book that I read recently and really enjoyed is called Full Moon Over Freedom by Angelina Lopez. And it is her second book in her, Freedom Kansas series. It's a small town romance. It's got a little bit of magic. I honestly think it's probably one of like the best contemporary series that have come out in the last 10 years. And I wish everybody would read these books, but that one is the one that I saw, you know, Second Chance Romance. It was like her first, and she's used to be like the, you know, the kind of like it girl in town, and he was the bad boy. And that's really great.
I'll go. Everything I have is being re-released. Like, it's all books that like I wrote years ago that are all being re-released. The Kingmaker and the Rebel King were just re-released. Long Shot is coming out through Bloom Books in a week, August 8th. So I'm really excited about that. My last new release was Before I Let Go last year. And I have one coming in March, which is the follow-up to Before I Let Go. I'm really, really excited about in the Skyland series. A book that I'm actually listening to right now that is fantastic is The Art of Scandal by Regina Black. It's fantastic. It's salacious. The writing is phenomenal. I mean, it's hard to believe that it's a debut. It's so good. It's coming out Tuesday, and it's called The Art of Scandal. It's politics. It's art. It's age gap. She's significantly older than, and I don't call it reverse age gap. It's just age gap. She's just older than he is. And the writing is fantastic. And I'm an audio girly, so I'm listening to the audio book, and it's fantastic. It's the same narrator who narrated 7 Days in June. So very, very good. Kind of
scandal. I heard her compare it, say it was like if Shonda Rhimes did The Good Wife, and that's exactly what it is. It is delicious.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go. The book I recommend everyone to start with, My Royals, Cheeky Royal, if you haven't read them yet. They're just beautiful, fun, set in a fictional island in the Caribbean. They're just a really good time. Black female lead, and she, you know, is like the worst royal guard in history, and she kind of trips through her life, but it's really, really fun. And she becomes the woman that she was always intended to be. So it's one of my favorites. And I always say start there, because once you start there, I do a very good job in the back matter. Yes, if Sky Warren is watching, I listen to you and I lead you through, and you get to read all the other ones. All of the leads are women of color. I just really did not play. In terms of what I'm reading right now, it is my Brown Nipple Challenge pick. It's That Time I Got Drunk and Saved a Demon, Kimberly Lumming. It is hilarious and so fun.
Those are so much fun.
So, so fun.
And the new covers are gorgeous.
Yes. The covers are like, they're so cute.
Yeah, but they have she's revealed like the new covers from
I was seeing her on TikTok and I was just like, oh my God. So I really, really love them. And for my audio people, because I too am an audio girly, the glasses, they don't really work. The audio is fantastic. And it's a Brown Apple Challenge book. So if you're always looking, just you can always check my website. It has the latest one up there. But really, really fun.
I have a book coming out on Tuesday.
And it's great.
Thank you. Tastes Like Shepker is the second book in my If Shakespeare Was an Auntie series. It follows Dating Dr. Thill, the two characters from Dating Dr. Thill that are the main characters in this book are Bobby and Bunty. And it is inspired by Much Ado About Nothing. So there's lots of shenanigans, a little bit of bondage, and just, you know, just a jolly good time. I have been just on such a like reading and listening kick lately. Like, I'm coming out of a book slump, so I feel like I just want to inhale all the stories. I just finished Kiss the Girl by Zoraida Cordova that comes out on Tuesday, which is so fun. It's inspired by The Little Mermaid, and there's like a girl band and like the singer leaves the girl band to go with a hunky guy, Eric, on tour. It's really cute. And I'm actually listening to like Anna Huang's King of Wrath and King of Pride.
So
like,
good.
It's a duet. So like in the duet audiobook, like whenever the hero speaks, like it's the narrator for that voice. So it's not like narrator by chapter, it's narrator by like person. And so the Italian hero in King of Wrath, like the way that I sit at attention whenever his voice like comes through my earbuds,
so good.
Is just wild. So just slipping that in there.
I wish I'd known. We would have like buddy listened because I love that book.
100%. When the third one comes out, we'll buddy listen.
Okay. Excellent. Done.
Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. Thank you so much, Nisha and Kennedy and Adriana and Nana. I look forward to hearing you talk all the time. Really, whenever.
Thanks,
Becca.
And there you have it. A huge thank you to Nisha Sharma, Nana Malone, Kennedy Ryan, and Adriana Herrera for inviting us into this important and fascinating conversation. If this has made you want to pick up copies of these authors' books, and you absolutely should, you can do that in our shop or on our website, meetcutebookshop.com. And if you've been enjoying this podcast, I would so appreciate it if you could take a moment to rate and review it on the podcast listening platform of your choosing. That helps other people find us, and that helps us keep making podcasts. That's all for this episode of the Meet Cute Book Pod. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Becca, the owner of Meet Cute Romance Bookshop in San Diego, California, and I hope you'll tune back in for more deep dives into romance writing, reading, and publishing.